Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air. And on today's program, my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, and I have a great guest. So let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome back into Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm sitting with my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, myself, Dr. Zach Clinton, and we're joined by ministry leader, renowned speaker, incredible host of the That Sounds Fun podcast, and leader of the That Sounds Fun podcasting network, as well as New York Times bestselling author Annie F. Downs. Today, we're going to be discussing how grief really works. It's not always neat, linear, or predictable. How to have some of the hardest conversations with children about death, loss, and hope as we unpack her book, Where Did TJ Go? Annie, my friend, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you guys for being here.
This is great to have you.
Oh, what an honor.
We're
going
to bring the couch in because we're going to turn the tables and
okay.
Have you lay down, you know. And
listen,
we're going to do some work.
I need about two therapists at a time, so this is probably how it should be. I need both of y'all to tell me how to do
this. We figured that.
Yeah, that's a truth. That is a truth.
Annie, as we start, we're here in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
You just got back from breakfast with some family.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have a room packed out of 8,000 women, sold out crowd, who is just hungry for the gospel and to be in community with one another. And in this cultural moment, you know, it's been a difficult road, especially the last couple of weeks as of this recording. I'm just interested up front, what has God maybe laid on your heart to go out and share with this audience?
Yeah, you know, one of the theme is grace and mercy.
Yes.
And so I've really sat in that part of Hebrews. And when you back up a little bit, it talks about how Jesus understands everything we've been tempted to do and every temptation we've experienced, but he didn't sin. And what I couldn't get away from, Dr. Zach, I couldn't get away from this idea that, like, I think growing up, when I thought about that verse, I thought it was about sexual sin. Like, Jesus was tempted and he didn't sin, you know? Right. And then you're like, well, I'm really tempted to not tell the whole truth because it will hurt less people's feelings. Wow. And I'm really tempted to, like, stay busy instead of grieving. Mm. I'm really tempted to, like, not hear that person say my name when I know they said my name. Yeah. And I thought, oh, Jesus was tempted to not tell the whole truth because it's a lot easier to tell a little white lie. Yeah. Or Jesus was to, and so I thought, oh man, so that's kind of what we're going to talk about this afternoon is how much Jesus understood what it was like to be human and how hard it is to be human.
Wow.
It's hard. This is a hard thing to do. Yes. I'm 45 and there are parts of this that have gotten easier and parts I've gone like, man, I know less how to do this than I ever have. Mm. And so the hope for the women here and the hope for me is I've been planning this and prepping for this has been Jesus gets it more than I think he does.
Wow.
And that's how he can pray for us and understand and why we can go to him and get mercy and grace. And it's because he understands more than I think he does.
Come on.
Annie, God's been doing some stuff in your heart, life, for a while. A lot of people, they love that backwater story. They want to know, what's the narrative? What drives a person? What's the DNA here? Mm. Because that says a lot about how they think, how they move, how they have fun.
Yeah.
You hear what I'm saying? Take us back to a little bit about you and just what is the story, narrative, probably maybe that a lot of us don't know.
Well, it's good to be sitting with two therapists as we go through this. Like, are we going to do family systems, do Gino, all that
stuff? I told you. Open-ended questions. We're not going close. We're going open. No yes and no's.
I think the part that probably people that I probably haven't shared a ton about is oldest daughter syndrome that I have, the people pleasing in me. And a lot of how I got here was doing the right thing publicly. Yeah. Now, does that always mean I was doing the right thing privately? No. Right? Like the thing I have dealt with, especially in my teen years and my 20s, was how do you get the secret sin out of your life? I looked great to everyone, but how do you get the secret sin out? How do you tell the whole truth?
Wow.
How do you step away from the things that, at this point in my life, I don't bring Oreos in my house and not tell my mentor Nancy, because Oreos are just food. Food doesn't have a morality, but what I know is if I start keeping any secrets, I have the tendency to keep all the secrets. Mm. And so if I have Oreos in my house because I'm emotionally eating because I'm sad about something, then the story that has been the theme in a lot of ways of my life has been, if there's a little doorway for secrets, there's a big doorway for secrets. Mm. And so I try to have no doorway for secrets.
I love that.
And so a lot of my spiritual growth behind the scenes is inviting people into all the parts that the public will never see, because they don't need to, you know? And how do you wrestle with being a human and wrestle with pain and wrestle with suffering and wrestle with grief in a way that, while being a public person, everyone's a public person. If you put on clothes today and walked out of your house, you're a public person.
Yeah.
And so everyone has to deal with what's actually private for my life and what can be personal but be shared. And so that's a lot. I mean, a lot of when I think about the stories that shaped me, it's a lot of the coming out of the darkness, a lot of the revealing what was hidden, a lot of the pain I didn't tell anybody that allowed me to be more integrated. That's it. The long-term goal is to be integrated.
You know, when you're living in that zone, there's a lot that you cover and you need relief.
Yes.
We need to laugh. You know that? I mean, seriously. And so laughter, in a way, then becomes almost a way to keep things repressed, to keep things dialed back. You know what I'm saying? It creates a whole nother place that we can go to. You get what I'm saying? Without having to dig and do and all that kind of stuff. Yes. And we need it.
That's my Enneagram 7-ness. That's my extroversion. That's my, all
that's
of
right.
That is, look over here. This is more fun. Like, let's, I mean, we were sitting at the office on Thursday, and I was telling my team about some pain that I'm in. Mm. And I said, but this is only a season. And we will blink, and it'll be Christmas, and we'll at least have more answers. And this won't feel so profoundly. And one of my teammates said, that is so sweet how you're able to reframe. And also, you're just allowed to be in pain. A lot of times, what you know about people who are funny and what you know about people who use humor is that it is a coping technique that can be redeemed and used for good when you're an integrated person who is feeling your feelings. It isn't every single person who's funny is also deeply sad. That's not true necessarily. Right. But there is a redeemed version, an integrated version that I am always going for too. But this was born, being funny was born out of having a funny dad and also having a way to reframe my pain so that I didn't have to stay in it.
Yes. I think this is a beautiful then transition into where we kind of want to go in terms of like the cultural moment that we're in. There's a lot of pain out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of brokenness. There's a lot of grief. There's a lot of mourning. And as we're talking about this, it's easy to deflect or to project some of our pain onto other people and to try to find things that might fill that God-shaped void within our hearts because, man, we just want to numb or anesthetize it at some length. But at the same time, we have to learn how to honor it.
Yeah.
We have to learn how to sit with it and to be faithful in spite of it.
Yes.
And I'd love for you just to help us understand grief at a deeper level. Obviously, you know, we know the five stages of, you know, going in and there being some denial, then all of a sudden there being anger, then bargaining and depression, getting hopefully to a place of acceptance. But that's not linear.
No.
That's not step by step. That's messy. It's all over the place.
So messy.
Help us understand what it means to honor those things, but also carefully navigate our way through.
Well, both of you should be answering this far more than me, but as a person who has grieved and is grieving and is I think this is true of all of us, but we're all in pain.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I would say, Dr. Zach, is like, you have to get off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to actually process your pain and your grief, you have to really limit how much time you're in other people's comment sections.
Wow.
Because I think a lot of our friends are dealing with their pain by being thumb warriors on Instagram.
It is so bad.
It's so bad.
And people talk about getting off, Annie, and they can't. The cycle is just chaos.
It's almost addicting.
It's addicting. Yeah. And what we actually don't want to do is this. What we don't want to do is sit at the table with our friends and family and go, hey, this thing happened in culture. I have feelings about it. Can we talk about it? It's much harder to do that and to actually feel the pain you feel and the what we all feel is afraid.
Yeah.
Because the world, as we have understood it, is changing so rapidly.
Mm.
And so we all feel afraid and we are grieving the, it makes me think of that Rascal Flatts song, I Miss Mayberry. You know, there's some of that that I think a lot of us feel. And so the first thing I'd say when we're talking about grieving is you have to actually feel it.
Yeah.
And the internet will give you a place to yell and scream, but not change.
Mm.
And so we need a break. We need to step away. And whether that's limiting to checking once a day or going, I'm only going to check on Tuesdays or whatever, or taking your 5 hours down to 3 hours, getting some space. And I think it is being more truthful than you've ever been with yourself first. Going like, man, you know what makes me afraid here? You know what makes me sad here? And that for me personally, the way I have grieved best is when I have gone, you know what I'm actually sad about?
Mm.
I'm actually sad that this whole thing didn't go the way I thought it would.
Right.
I'm actually sad that this, I had a picture in my mind and that picture has been demolished.
Yeah.
I'm actually sad that. And so that's helped me a lot. But also, I mean, I'm not just saying this because of y'all. Without therapy, how do we do this?
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know how people without Jesus grieve. I don't know how you grieve when there isn't a hope attached to it at all. And for believers, I don't know how you do it without getting some help. I am not sadder or more challenging case than the average human, and I haven't been able to do this without help. And be the version of me I wanted to be.
Hey, you're listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, co-host, along with my son, Dr. Zach Clinton, our special in-studio guest, Annie F. Downs. We're at the Hershey Giant Center Arena, 8,000 women here. We're having an incredible weekend together and incredible conversation with Annie.
Yes, and as we're talking about fear, I think what fear threatens is it begins to potentially fracture our faith. And I'm thinking about the next generation.
Yeah.
Because I have a heart and a passion like you to reach the next gen and really to just invest into them and to love on them. And in the midst of the chaos, I love that you brought up social media and stuff, because we live not only in a world of comparison culture built on perceived perfection, but then you talk about everything that we're seeing that's only exacerbating the chaos and the fear that's rampaging throughout our lives. And then I'm thinking about how grief begins to come into the conversation with this next gen. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the loss of not just a loved one, but even people that have the loss of dreams or the loss of expectations. So many things come into play.
Yep.
And it brings me to your book, right?
Yeah.
A book on grief and loss and how to help children navigate that with hope.
Yeah.
Where did TJ go?
Yeah.
Andy, can you help unpack just the story behind that book and the heart behind it all?
So I'm the oldest daughter, as I told y'all. I got a lot of oldest daughter stuff in me. And I'm the oldest of three. And my sister that's right next to me in age is married, has one child named Sam, and had multiple miscarriages in their marriage. And then she gets pregnant again, miraculously, in 2021. And pretty soon after we find out she's pregnant, they know the baby is sick. But they don't know how sick he is. And as he continues to grow, TJ, they find out he has trisomy 18, which is a genetic disorder that's not compatible with life.
Wow.
A lot of babies don't make it to birth that are diagnosed with trisomy 18. The ones that do usually live a few hours. And so that meant she spent her entire pregnancy, and our family spent her entire pregnancy, holding what we knew God could do, the miracle we wanted, and what the doctors are saying would happen. And when TJ was born, he survived to birth. And then he actually ended up living 56 days between God's kindness and medical intervention. He lived for 2 months and did. A lot of it was at my brother-in-law and sister's house on hospice care. And in the midst of the last few weeks of TJ's, my sister's pregnancy with TJ, we were thinking, how do we explain this to Sam? Sam is two and he knows his mom's pregnant. He knows what pregnant is. He knows what babies are. How do we explain that this baby is not going to live? And so I called counselors that y'all know and love in Nashville, and I said, hey, what's the book? And they were like, oh, there isn't a book. I was like, no, what's the book for like grieving siblings? Like, what's the one that y'all hand out? Because everybody has a book. They didn't have one. So then I called some pastors. I said, what's the book? What do y'all give to families if someone in your church dies?
It's not out there.
Right. So I was like, well, I don't make casseroles, but I can write a book.
There you go.
And so I was like, well, I'm just going to write this for Sam. And so what I did, Dr. Zach, is I sat down. I was driving from Franklin to Nashville, which y'all have done before. It's about a 25-minute drive.
Yeah.
And I start thinking, what would I say to Sam if I could explain this in a story form? And the whole thing downloaded into my brain. And I took my phone and I just started recording what I was seeing and just sobbing as I'm driving. And so I get back to my house and I just type it up. I listen back to that recording. I type it up. I split it up on different pages. I steal clip art from the internet. I go to the print shop down the street. I have them laminate it, print it out. I make two copies, one for my parents and one for my sister. And I'm like, well, there we go. That will help Sam. And what ends up happening, and it is a story about the younger sibling dying and what is heaven like? Where does TJ go?
Yes.
And what might heaven be like for a baby and for a child? And then at the end of the book, kind of one of the through lines is there's good news even in sad stories.
Wow.
And at the end, Sam feels sad that TJ isn't able to play with him on earth. And I thought that was really important because in my real life, the hope of heaven is not the end of the story. We're still allowed to grieve for what we don't have. And I wanted Sam to know that was okay to still feel sad and to know that TJ was with God. And so to fast forward a little bit, we're reading it to Sam for a couple of months. And my sister will call and say, hey, this page is great, but he gets bored halfway through. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm kind of like, all right. And so I like open up my Word doc and I change that. And then she'd be like, hey, this isn't actually how this would go as a parent, because I'm not married, don't have kids. And so I'm not a parent. And so she'd be like, we wouldn't actually say that. I'd be like, okay. So I'm like editing it. And then I finally, about 6 months, I send it to my agent and I'm like, hey, we needed this. And now my sister and I have made it right. Will you just see if a publisher wants to do this? It's the nichest market. And they did. And so then about a year later, Where Did TJ Go is out, and thousands of families have the book now. And so
think about how many instances where kids go through grief. I mean, loss, just constant loss.
Yes.
You know that? And you're right. We as parents tend to think that our kids are immune to those things. So we think if we don't talk about them, then they're not an issue for the kids.
That's right.
You hear what I'm saying?
That's right.
Whether it's mom and dad having problems, maybe a loss of a pet, a brother, a sister, something happens.
Yes.
Or they go through some other type of trauma.
Yes.
And nobody's talking to the kids.
Yeah.
No one.
Because they're playing.
Yes.
So they must be okay.
Yes, exactly.
Because they're outside playing.
And
or
so if we don't bring it up, it's okay. And time will heal it and it'll all go away. And these kids are left to process this stuff alone.
Which is wild because we were all kids and we knew that wasn't true.
Right.
As kids, we knew when things were going on.
Yeah.
And I mean, even if a child, well, I'll tell you, as a person who used to be a child, even if I didn't have language for what I felt, my stomach knew what I felt.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My stomach knew when something was off. My stomach knew when something was sideways. And so had I been in an environment where I was able to express that and an adult was able to talk with me about that, I may be better at processing my emotions as an adult.
Yes.
When my stomach feels funny. And so we know that. And so that was our hope with Where Did TJ Go, is like, okay, now counselors do have a book that they can say, if they're, and in the book, TJ dies in the hospital. And we did that on purpose because I wanted families who had a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Or who had to make an impossible medical decision,
yeah.
Or whose child dies in a hospital from an illness, or a family who at some point has had an abortion in their family or in their story,
sure.
And needs to explain it. I wanted this to be any family that has lost a child for any reason thinks this book will help us. And And so that's one of the reasons it doesn't exactly match our family story. Yeah. And when I wrote it, we didn't know if TJ was coming home from the hospital. And so it's really meant a lot to me to hear from counselors, to hear from pastors. Yes. We had a church in Nashville had a child die of an asthma attack, I believe. Wow. It was a medical emergency. And the pastor calls me and says, how quick can you get me 50 copies of this book? Because we want to hand it out Sunday morning.
Wow.
And I said, come to the office. We've got them. We'll figure out how to work it all out later. Come get them. Yep. And that's why we did it, is we want, and y'all have had people say this to y'all about your work too, or that if it just helps one person, I'm like, no way. If it just helps one person, I should have had coffee with them. I'm not out here trying to help one person. My nephew didn't die to help one person. Yes. I want to help him. When we plant a seed in the ground and a tree grows and it makes apples, we're not hoping for an apple. Come on. I'm hoping for a harvest every single year. So I'm like, no, I want 1 million families to be helped by where did TJ go? Because the planting of that seed of that child's life needs to have fruit that is more than one person. I'm happy to have coffee if I'm supposed to help one person.
Yes.
I'm not out here writing books that help one person.
Many, many times I've gone through Philippians 4, seen a lot of different things in that passage. Rejoice in the Lord. Always again, I say rejoice. Then everybody quotes verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but they miss verse 5. And it says, let your confidence be known to everyone.
Oh, yeah.
The Lord is at
hand. He's near, yes.
I think about Paul in the greatest moments of darkness, challenge, desperation. He consoled himself with, the Lord is near.
Yes.
The Lord is near. There's something about presence. In the midst of this grief journey, togetherness matters.
Yes.
Touch, proximity, you hear what I'm saying? Matters. Hmm. It's... even though we don't have all the answers, we do this best together.
Yes.
Christianity has suffered so much organizationally with siloism. People live in these little cocoons. They protect them. They think they have to, you know, and that they've got the stuff. And the truth is, they don't have much at all. Those buckets are pretty empty.
Yeah.
But when you bring people together, they sculpt strength. They give life.
Yeah.
They bring hope. And I think about our kids. Here we are thinking that we just let them do this alone, because that's really what we're doing with them.
Yeah.
We let them alone in their grief. What a tragedy.
Yes.
What an opportunity to come back and say, hey, listen.
Yes.
I'm here with you.
Yes.
In this, and we do this together.
Yes, you know that's right.
And
that's right.
And the other piece, as I was listening to Zach talk for a moment, the adults we work with, they're just big kids.
Literally.
A lot of them haven't processed what they had to journey through all by themselves. You know that?
That's right.
And so they don't know how to do that piece. You can't give well what you don't do well.
Yes.
You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so there's so much here. It's beautiful to have these kind of conversations, because we all have to do this work.
Yes, that's right.
And when we do it, it changes outcomes.
Yes.
That's the dynamite. That's the gift.
Yeah.
And so for the person out there today who's really grieving and who feels like they're discouraged and they're disappointed with the way that life has gone, and they may be falling into a pit of despair, what's a final word of hope and encouragement and motivation that you would leave that individual with today?
Yeah. What comes to my mind feels flippant, but it isn't, but that this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. Is actually really profoundly helpful to me.
Yeah.
My friend who travels with me and I were literally in the car and on the way here saying, a version of, we will look back and say, that was a really hard season, but we survived it.
Yeah.
And here's what we learned, and here's how God was good. And there, you know, you just have some markers in your life. So that would be my encouragement, is like, this won't last forever.
Yes.
Nothing does. What you can do when you look outside and see the seasons changing, what it is, one of the things it's meant to remind us is that seasons change.
That's right.
This will not last forever. There is another side to this. Do your work. What is yours to do? And get the help you can get. And also, you'll be all right.
That's
this
right.
too shall pass.
That's right. I hear you saying, God sees you.
Yes.
He's with you.
Yes.
You may not feel it.
Yes.
But I know this, he will see you through.
That's right. That's right. The Lord is near.
The Lord is near.
The Lord is near.
And every storm runs out of rain. Annie F. Downs, my friend, we're grateful for you. We're grateful for the impact that you've had on our lives, that you've had on countless others. I want to close this way. Where can our audience go to find out more about you, to pick up a copy of Where Did TJ Go, to listen to the That Sounds Fun podcast? Is there a one-stop shop?
Yeah, easy. It's embarrassingly easy to find me. I'm Annie F. Downs everywhere. F like fancy. Absolutely everywhere. That's where you go. And we, you know, we'd love to see Where Did TJ Go available to any families that have lost a child. And so what we say to a lot of people is, if you don't need one today, buy five. Put five in your closet, and before you know it, there's a family you know and love that is going to go through a loss, and their kids need support, and you've already got it there. So take them a casserole and take them a copy of Where Did TJ Go.
Love it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us, Annie.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, guys.
To all of our audience, we're so grateful for you, and I hope and pray that this conversation has been an encouragement, that even in seasons and moments of hurt and pain, that you would keep on holding on to hope, because our hope has a name. And his name is Jesus. Thank you so much for joining us. We love being a part of your life.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.